Hello, and welcome to Silver Threads, a weekly program of information on how you can make your senior years shine. I'm Kathy Van Skoyt. If you are looking to retire in the near future or have already retired, investments, money management, and housing are three areas that have the greatest impact on having a successful retired life. The September-October issue of 55 Plus magazine includes several articles that offer insight, helpful suggestions, and personal experiences in each of those areas. And they include dealing with investment volatility, and more by Jim Terwilliger in the financial health segment, Retirement is Not for Sissies by Maggie Moraldo, So You Want to Start a B&B by Deborah Jean Sargent, and also by Deborah Jean, Downsizing, Selling Your Large House. Well, I've worked with several financial planners both during my time teaching and in retirement, and I've been pleased with the guidance received and thus the financial gain over the years. However, one area that I was not familiar with was the and more that Jim talks about, the sequencing, which is explained now in Jim Terwilliger's article. Dealing with investment volatility and more. Most investors are familiar with the concept of volatility, but many are not acquainted with the associated concept of sequence of returns. Volatility occurs when investments are exposed to the stock market through individual stocks or stock mutual funds. It is common to see investment portfolios with 70 to 100% stock exposure during one's earning or accumulation years and 50 to 70% exposure during retirement or distribution years. The purpose is simple. Stocks offer the opportunity to grow investments at a rate greater than inflation. During accumulation, you want to maximize the size of your nest egg available at retirement. During distribution, you want your nest egg to stay ahead of inflation to minimize the probability of running out of money and to maintain spending power of your distribution. So far, so good, but along with the stocks providing potential higher return comes the downside factor of risk, with volatility being the primary risk. While stocks historically have risen in value over the long term, the ride is bumpy. This bumpiness or volatility appears in cycles that can last days, weeks, months, and even years. For example, during the past 20 years, the S&P 500 index showed a 32.4% gain in 2013, but a 37% loss in 2008. Talk about bumpy. While the average rate of return for the 20-year 1999 to 2018 period was 7.2%, compound annualized or effective return was only 5.6%. It's the effective return that determines how much money you have at the end of any period. The higher the volatility during that period, the lower the effective return. Volatility is the investor's enemy. It's important to understand how volatility and sequence of returns impact investments during the two primary phases of our financial lives. And here's the following, lump sum investment. This is the simplest scenario. Invest a sum of money and let it grow over a period of time. This might be to fund a specific goal at some point in the future and can occur during either phase of your financial life. If there is no volatility, such as with a long-term CD, the effective rate of return is equal to the average return and the resulting value is easy to calculate. But if we had invested $10,000 in an S&P 500 index mutual fund on January 1, 1999, the 20-year compound annualized return of 5.6% would have resulted in a balance of $29,736 on December 31, 2018. Even though the average return over this time period was 7.2%, we would not have achieved a return of 7.2% due to volatility. For a lump sum investment, sequence of returns does not impact the outcome. If the effective return is 5 6/10%, the final dollar value is not influenced at all by the order in which the annual returns occur. Volatility matters, but sequence of returns does not. The accumulation phase. This scenario involves using excess cash flow to make annual contributions to retirement and investment accounts. Total portfolio growth is fueled by a combination of contributions and investment returns. As before, no volatility, the effective return is equal to the average return, and the resulting value is easy to calculate. But with volatility, the effective return is impacted negatively. Higher volatility over the long time frame will reduce the ultimate gain. Further, sequence of returns matters here. Generally, a poor stock market during an early portion of the accumulation period, followed by a strong stock market, results in a bigger nest egg at the time of retirement. Such a sequence yields a higher effective rate of return. Distribution phase. This scenario involves using money from your retirement or investment portfolios to help fund retirement. Typically, annual distributions would slowly increase to keep pace with inflation. Again, with no volatility, the effective return is equal to the average return, resulting in no impact. But with volatility, the effective return is again lower. Higher volatility over the retirement time frame will result in a nest egg that depletes more rapidly. Sequence of returns again matters. Generally, a poor stock market during the first portion of retirement, followed by a strong stock market, results in a more rapidly depleting nest egg due to lower effective returns. Note that for the accumulation and distribution phases, the opposite scenario, strong stock market first followed by poor stock market, results in the opposite sequence of returns outcome. In a future column, we'll review the implications of the above and to the investor and what action can be taken to reduce volatility and sequence of return impact. In the meantime, it's important for you to be aware of these impacts so that they do not take you by surprise. And Jim Terwilliger is a CFP, Senior Vice President, and Senior Planner Advisor for CNB Wealth Management of Canandaigua National Bank and Trust Company. He can be reached at 585-419-0670, extension 50630. And going on now to Maggie Moraldo's Retirement is Not for Sissies. While it's possible to be thoroughly enjoying the retirement lifestyle, it is, however, accompanied by financial fears, especially if the investments you are counting on don't continue to grow, or, as in past markets, they drop sharply. As a sooner-than-expected retiree, I had concerns about my financial future. After sharpening pencil after pencil myself, then talking to financial experts, my anxiety began to decrease. I assumed that cautious spending, early Social Security benefits, and a monthly draw from my IRA would be adequate for my living expenses. I also hoped for occasional employment for additional rainy day costs. Well, 3 years later, I have learned that being frugal and cautious are not easy to practice. Recently, for example, I felt obligated to go to an out-of-town wedding for my nephew's stepson. The cost of the weekend was approximately $1,500. I will be going to an out-of-town event again for a family member celebration, a new baby. I'm sure that I'll have to spend more money. Now, here's a list of some unforeseen expenses, things that I had neglected to include in my retirement miscellaneous expenses. Our children are buying homes. Now, even if we don't assist in the down payment, we feel the need and the desire to help with related purchases such as furniture, decorative accessories, or landscaping, for example. They may be moving out of town, just as many of our friends have, and this means high travel costs and the related expenses there. The grandchildren are arriving now, both ours and those of our friends and family members. This means gifts for the showers and arrivals. Also, there are still weddings taking place of our own family members or those close to us. We know how expensive this becomes when we add up the gift, the clothing, and perhaps transportation. There is more free time now in our lives, and it leaves room for entertainment that has been long desired. There are lunches and dinners with previous coworkers, neglected old school chums, and other old and new friends. We are buying subscriptions for season tickets for the theater or sporting events or other venues. Here again are also the incidental expenses such as dining out, gasoline, and souvenirs. A sad part of aging is illness and death. We are all going to be dealing with this, especially now, and I, for one, did not even think to have to include this as an incidental expense. But the related costs are heavy. They include medical and hospital visits for us or our loved ones, copays for doctors and prescriptions, gasoline and parking fees. The funerals have the possible cost of travel, and there are the gifts and memorials as well. Anticipating all these new associated costs is near impossible. It's probably best to pad the miscellaneous category in your budget just a little bit more. College degree notwithstanding, I'm going to take any employment I'm offered to cushion my retirement expenses. I've also warned my children that I may need to move in with them someday. The looks on their blood-drained faces were hilarious. You must try it. That aging process I mentioned is worse than expected. Dental implants, cataract surgery, replacement parts, and I'm actually very healthy for my age. Dipping into savings, remortgaging, cutting back on entertainment, and now that's the way of life. My children think I'm cheap because of the cutbacks I employ. They should actually applaud me for not becoming their burden. Wait, I'll do it myself. Going on now to, so you want to start a B&B. Operating a bed and breakfast establishment is a lot like having company nearly all the time. The following 55-plussers enjoy operating a place of lodging and shared with us what it's like. Christine Hunt, 68, and her husband Scott Gelford are the innkeepers at the White Farm Bed and Breakfast in Brockport. The couple bought the property in 1994 as 5 acres of what was once a 200-acre farm. They view their use of the house as a B&B as a means of preserving the 1820s house, which is listed on the National Register of Historic Places. The downstairs remains nearly the same as it did nearly 200 years ago, a point that greatly pleases Hunt. We still have the original centuries-old trees and a lawn that's well developed over those years, Hunt said. Still, modern upgrades help keep guests more comfortable. It's very important to me that I don't have to change the building and modify it too much. She added 2 bathrooms so that each of their current 3 guest bedrooms would have its own bathroom. That meant sacrificing 1 bedroom. The building structure didn't change, Hunt said. We also updated the heating, added air conditioning, and more recently added Wi-Fi. Previous generations had added indoor plumbing and electricity. She had also to ensure the building complies with fire safety requirements, such as adequate fire extinguishers and smoke detectors, alternative lighting in case of a power outage, clearly marked and sufficient exits, and insurance as a place of lodging. We didn't do a lot of remodeling, Hunt said. I think one of the neat things is the personal touch of the period house. It's basically a Victorian house, about 1865 to 1885 in decor. As an antiques collector, many of her own items decorate the rooms and common areas. The kitchen is from the early 1900s, though it has a new stove and refrigerator. No one in the 70s ripped out the walls, she said, and that was one of the things that was so exciting to walk into. The house has two marble fireplaces, hardwood floors, and medallions on the ceiling that once encircled gaslight fixtures. Bare light bulbs replaced the fixtures, but Hunt is replacing them with period-appropriate electric lights. She has also obtained some authentic period furnishings. A descendant of the home's original owners was downsizing and offered a bedroom set to Hunt. The furniture had belonged to her grandfather and could easily have been from 1870 or 1880. Hunt offered to purchase it, but the woman gave it to her. "I now have an original bedroom set from the 1870s," Hunt said. "It's a magnificent bedroom set, solid walnut, and it's glorious. How do you express gratitude for such an amazing thing? It was important to her that we would appreciate it." With 10-foot ceilings, large furniture such as the bedroom set is the right scale. Touches of authenticity like this appeal to Hunt. The rooms don't have televisions and hot tubs, for example. "We treasure the thought of quiet and relaxation," she said. She also enjoys meeting her guests from far-flung locales. As a former teacher in Medina who retired 12 years ago, she enjoys learning and teaching her guests about the local area. Her husband retired from working as an electrician. They don't employ anyone to help in their B&B endeavor. "I think you shouldn't underestimate the amount of time and work involved," Hunt said. "You're always cleaning, since you clean every day. There's a lot of bathrooms to clean. You have to guard your personal life, and you have to plan to go on vacation. It's a wonderful vehicle to meet many nice people, and I have such a good feeling about them, especially as times become more troubled. It allows you to meet those people you normally wouldn't meet in your day-to-day life." Chatting with guests also appeals to Margaret Covington, 66, and Patty English, 64, who operate the Chalet of Canandaigua. English had worked as a business consultant and Covington as a controller for several companies before becoming a consultant. They saw an opportunity in the tourism industry in the Finger Lakes as a retirement career. English wanted to start a B&B, and Covington wanted to open a bistro. Since B&Bs offer breakfast, that represented a compromise Covington could live with. They looked for 2 years to find just the right property. The duo moved in by October of 2006, started renovating after Thanksgiving, and opened in March of 2007. The house was empty because it was a home. They had to do some remodeling and replace the bathrooms as well as work out building code issues, all the while still working their day jobs. "Now we don't know how we did it," English said. Their grand opening welcomed 150 people. The chalet relies upon positive feedback on travel sites to interest more guests in staying there. "If you look at the reviews, a lot of people comment on the breakfast," Covington said. "We are in the top 25 from across the country of small inns and B&Bs. That's a huge accomplishment for us. Food is a very important ingredient of what people enjoy here." Covington thinks that the structure's rustic appeal as a log cabin appeals more to men who tend to shy away from foo-foo B&Bs dripping with crocheted doilies and flowery appointments. "It has a nice mix of male and female," she said as she refers to her clientele. The B&B's tagline reflects that idea: rustic enough for him, elegant enough for her. They carefully watch market trends to see what guests want and how they could improve their offerings. "People want a place to go where they feel at home and they're pampered, but not overtly," Covington said. "It's natural. We don't crowd them. There's a knack to know when to be available. We built it on how we want to be taken care of." They have also worked to become more familiar with the area so that they can recommend places of entertainment and dining after personally experiencing them. We gained information from our guests as well, English said. Covington advises anyone interested in operating a B&B, you had better like people. English added, some people aren't social. The biggest issue is you've got to want to provide service. And now, downsizing, selling your large house. If you want to downsize during the current seller's market, you may find that it's harder than you think to sell your spacious home. The people who are most likely interested in your house, those between 35 and 45, have already lived in their small starter home as younger adults. Buying a larger home like yours is usually a subsequent home purchase, an upgrade from their starter home. That market is small and more savvy because they're not first-timers, said Teresa Downham, real estate agent with Nothnagel Realtors in Fairport. Those buyers are a little older and they have kids that are older. These buyers work at near peak of their careers, and while this primes them to make a large home purchase, it also makes them not interested in fixer-uppers. Selling to them means ready and no fuss, Downham said. They want the social status of a bigger, nicer home in a nice neighborhood, but they are really stretched for time. They hire out cleaning, yard, and pool care. Many buyers want to see upgraded bathrooms, kitchen, roof, and furnace, according to David Walsh, associate broker with Park Avenue Realtors in Rochester. These areas are the most costly and vital aspects of a home, and also the most inconvenient to upgrade while living in the house. Also, aspects like wall-to-wall carpeting should go. People these days like hardwood, Walsh said. The house will sell for a lot more money. Walsh advises 3/4-inch tongue and groove oak. For the bedrooms, new carpeting could work, and tile or more waterproof flooring for the bathroom. General remodeling also helps a larger home sell faster. The problem for many retirees is that they likely oversaw their home's last remodel, but forget when it happened. Michael Lease, real estate salesperson with Coldwell Banker in Rochester, said that he recently went through a home with wall-to-wall forest green carpet. Be very conscious if you're appealing to the masses, Lease said. Take down the wallpaper and paint. Remove old carpet and update fixtures. He added that buyers may like the look of the 40s or early 60s, but the 70s and 80s look outdated. Outside, the curb appeal can help a home sell sooner, said Robert Blaine, real estate agent with Blaine Realty in Rochester. He said that colored flowers, trimmed bushes, and lawns looking good make a big difference. The lawn should not have a lot of weeds, he added. The trim should be painted and the front door painted. Once the home repairs and updates are done, the home should be deep cleaned beyond normal maintenance. Blaine suggested power washing the siding, deck, and sidewalk. Spruce up inside with spring cleaning regardless of the time of year. Wash the windows, Walsh advised. It's a simple thing, but it makes a home really sparkle. I've learned that early in my career, and it never fails. Staging is the next step in the process. This means that the home's furnishings are arranged in an eye-pleasing way instead of completely removing all furnishings. Carolyn Stifler, real estate agent with RE Max in Rochester, encourages sellers to remove knickknacks like Disney plates and Hummel figures. They need to be given to family, sold, or moved out, she said. Sometimes seniors say, wow, I didn't realize these things don't hold their value. Other people don't want them. We refer people to companies that do wholesale houses. Many younger people don't want grandma's china, as these dishes can't go in the dishwasher or the microwave. Large, heavy furniture isn't readily movable, unlike modern furniture. Pay an experienced realtor and work together with their suggestions to present your property in its absolute best light, Stifler said. The final price will reflect that. Paring down your belongings will make both selling your home and moving from it much easier. Bobby Goodrich, managing owner of Grandma's Helpers, LLC, in Henrietta, helps older adults downsize. She said the best strategy is to focus on one box or closet at a time, not a whole room. Recycle or dispose of items that have no value, such as old newspapers, broken appliances, and excess food storage containers. Non-seasonal items untouched for months need to go too. Next, decide what furnishings and keepsakes you want to retain. I always tell my clients to look at the things they really love. You don't need 20 keepsakes from your great aunt. Select one or two items and photograph the rest that you donate. Furniture often comes down to practicality. Think about the new space that you're going to and what is really going to work in that new space, Goodrich said. If you need the money and have some valuable furnishings, Goodrich said that consulting with an antique dealer may help you learn their value and an effective way to sell items. Donating items may also be an alternative. Donations are a great way to make yourself feel good about the downsizing, Goodrich said. Well, this issue of 55 Plus also has articles about other second acts in retirement that might be of interest. Christine Green, former college scientist and professor, tried her hand at grant writing, and now she manages a team of more than 40 people as CEO and founder of Brockport Research Institute, or BRI. Then there's Suzanne Mayer, who morphed her experience as a corporate problem solver and consultant with a set of finely honed discovery and process skills to become a community activist fighting to improve Rochester's neighborhoods. She is well known in Rochester as someone who can get to the core of a problem, and she helps people devise a way out. Well, I hope you've enjoyed these articles. Thanks for listening today, and until next week, I'm Kathy Van Skoik. You've been listening to Silver Threads, a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. The audio producer for the show is Maureen Rich, and I'm Kathy Van Skoik. I hope you will join me again next week for more information and updates for making the best of your silver years. If you'd like to hear this program again, you can download a podcast of the show at our website, wxxi.org.